Every wall that exists in our modern built environment is an invitation. An open invitation to bring more beauty, delight, and connection into our lives and communities through art. Hi, I'm Morgan and hostess of If These Walls Could Talk. Do you know of any bare walls that could use a transformation? Whether you're an artist or an art advocate, this podcast will provide the inspiration to make your next mural project a huge success.
This neighbor came out and she was really upset. She was really upset. We didn't make her night. She expressed that no one had engaged with her. She had been living there for 30 years. She, you know, was upset that she would have to look at this every day. A woman artist who was collaborating with another local artist here, she was able to pull her aside and say, I'm sorry for us, you know, for you having to go through this. And really just ultimately said, look, I'm trying my best to paint something beautiful for you. It was an uncomfortable and I was a bit upset and just disappointed in myself. Like, what? How did I miss that?
Hello and welcome to the next episode of If These Walls Could Talk. Today, my guest is Juan Carlos Araujo, who is founder of Empire 7 Studios in San Jose. He's also the person who really put the powwow, the last few powwows together for San Jose. He's got a big team that helps him with Empire 7 and powwow, but the brainchild behind that is Juan Carlos here. So I'm super excited to talk about art in San Jose, the upcoming powwow, and really arts culture in San Jose right now. So thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've been really excited to do this. I think we've been trying to do it for a year.
Yeah, you've been busy, man. You're moving, you're making art, you're planning things.
Yeah, we officially moved. But I wanted to say that I listened to all the episodes.
No way, thank you.
I really nerded out. Your first two episodes really struck with me too, because I felt that it was a forum that was really honest and truthful. And it was also, I kind of like cutting, you know, ice breaking, you know, and I feel like sometimes in the arts community, we don't want to offend our, you know, city leadership and all that. And so, but I just thought it was really a good cause and an important conversation to have. So since then, I think all your podcasts have been really on that platform.
That means a lot. I really appreciate that. Coming from you, actually, that like means a lot.
No, I mean, thanks. I'm just happy that somebody's having the conversation and putting it out there. You know,
yeah,
that's important.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Great.
And thank you for having me too. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. So how, I mean, it feels like you are a huge art advocate as well as artist. How do you, let me just ask a question. How do you balance your time between those two things?
That's a good question, because this year has been more focused on trying to do me and like have the, you know, like all the workload that comes along with something like the festival, powwow, and also managing the gallery and independent projects. So really, I've been having to really be careful with how I spend my time. It's really tough. Like, you don't really have time to hang out with friends, and you miss out on special occasions or picnics, barbecues, concerts, whatever, because, you know, for me to be mentally prepared for my next day, I need that kind of like regeneration and focus. And so meditation is also very important in my life now. Try to do it on the regular and just kind of like let that really lead a lot of the path, you know, that I've been trying to focus and trying to stay on.
Okay, so affirming to hear you say both those things, because oftentimes I feel the same, like it's what I'm doing is so important to me. I want to be on my game. And it means going to bed at 10 o'clock sometimes, you know, and missing out on the fun.
It's a sacrifice. Those are the sacrifices, I think, that we take, you know, but it allows us to to do the work, you know?
Yeah, and that we believe right. in and yeah. do it right and show yeah. up for it.
Yeah, be 100%.
Yeah.
I did a lot. I wasn't always 100% myself, which really had a kind of negative impact on me at some point. But I think I'm grateful no matter what for the path that I've had because it's led me here.
Uh-huh. So it's yeah. often when you really care about something, you know, like how you said you wanted to start giving 100% or you could see that you could make a difference in the art community in San Jose and taking on responsibility. You wanted to show up for that. That makes a big difference when you have a reason beyond yourself to pull yourself out of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. The whole power and responsibility equation. Mm-hmm. With power comes responsibility. And mm-hmm. if there's any little bit of power that people have expressed that I have in terms of the movement that we're contributing to, yeah, absolutely. Like, I think I also pride myself in my work, like you said. And I mm-hmm. think being able to be clear-minded and focused yeah. is like now a real treat. To yeah. to have, be able to be like third conscious and like yeah. be able to be in control of my own.
Yeah.
It's powerful for sure. So it allows me to be hopefully better at what I do. Yeah.
So you got a paint education. Like, you know.
Yeah.
How I know. To do a good job.
Yeah. I think that's actually like a great subject to share, because a lot of people, I think I get that question all the time. How did I really dive into this work? And aside from loving the culture, I think it was a perfect opportunity for me to like learn in 13 years, learn about paint products from inside and out. And there'd be times where I'd like, just a friend of mine would, we were working together and we'd read every label and just like kind of quiz each other. Because we were bored. Some days were slow, you know. We're like, oh, what did you learn? You know, what's that product do and this product do? And we really just nerded out on stuff like that and see what, like, the techniques and things like that. So it really did open my eyes. And I started picking up side work. And so I started to get hands-on experience. I would work with my uncle and just do side jobs that I would get him through my job, you know, through the paint shop.
Murals are interesting because they are a hybrid, essentially, of the skills of a house painter with the art thrown in. Mm-hmm. And I meet a lot of artists that want to do murals, but they've never shadowed a house painter for a day, and they don't know how to prep a surface, and they don't understand, you know, fading and what is going to impact that, and varnishes and all the chemical layers. It's a big piece of having something come out successfully. Do you find yourself coaching artists on how to do things right? They don't have the experience with house painting that you do. So,
yeah, I mean, a lot of the emerging local talent that might, you know, probably painted an exterior wall for the first time. Absolutely, yeah. That's part of like powwow or just us in general as artists. I think we share technique and, you know, definitely always sharing information. It's so simple. It's just over the counter stuff. Truly, like, you can go to a paint store and if they're not busy, they'll be happy to share, you know, information. Yeah. Most employees, we like to kind of really dive into the details, right? Mm-hmm. And to help walk people like step by step in order for it to have true success, you know.
But that's the difference between Benjamin Moore and Home Depot. Just by the way, like the paint, let's say the paint's only 20% better, but you're going to get all the information you need and you're going to get
from the
so
mom and pop
much
shops.
Better. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, let's dive into powwow. I think powwow is super interesting. Tell me about how you initially got involved with powwow and how it went the first couple of years.
The first time I actually went to go experience it, we went to Hawaii, my partner Jennifer on, and I just decided to go to Hawaii for the first time. And it turns out it was our first trip there. And it was actually also the event happening, which is kind of like the staple where it was rooted.
They started in Hawaii?
It started in Hong Kong, but really took off and found home, like a home base in Hawaii and Kaka'ako. In Oahu. So my first year there, just going out to check it out was really an eye-opening experience. And of course, as usual, like, I came back and I was like, hey, Jen, you know, we should do something like that. And she's like, you're crazy. And how we got involved is that, you know, through some of our projects that we were working on, we were able to make some kind of like breakthrough and be able to at least paint outside. Not necessarily just murals, but there was opportunities like some artists be able to do like street style graffiti burners and things like that.
In San Jose, you started finding walls. Before the festival, you started piecing together, hey, let's put some art on the walls, figuring out how to make it happen.
Yeah, I had a really... The landlord turned out to be not so bad because he would really let us do anything we wanted in terms of just being safe and, you know, respectable.
Is this at your old studio?
At my old studio.
It was wild outside.
Yeah.
That was later on, but
that was more later once everything was sold and it was going to come down. We took advantage of that too. But during our open days, you know, we were a tenant there too. And our landlord, you know, was flexible and just let us, said, okay, you know, go ahead. And so, yeah, we were just able to do aerosol art. And I think there's been a big gap where artists, the city of San Jose wasn't allowing any kind of, I mean, even ourselves, they called the cops on us a few times when we were painting because, I don't know, someone thought we would be vandalizing and brought their light. But yeah, I feel like it had a big stigma, you know?
Yeah.
And so things have changed. Obviously, I think now there's one of the things you highlight in your podcast is this kind of like a trend of murals going on now.
Yeah, big trend. Which actually this is the best conversation. We are the two best people to answer this question right here. I'm a little bit on the fence on whether aerosol art is going to last as long because the paint coats are thinner. So it feels like it would wear down over time. So if you want a piece to last 25, 30 years, like I use Benjamin Moore, 2-3 coats, because I'm like, there's a physical layer bridging it and lasting. And I feel like if somebody sprays on a single coat, it's fast. It looks awesome. You can do it on a smaller budget, but it doesn't feel like it's going to last as long or look as good, you know, 15 or 20 years down the line. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the facts are that it does wear a lot quicker. Artists have seen their work fade, or you know, but there's also, I think, aerosol artists especially, some of them come from a path where some of their work doesn't exist more than
a weekend, or
a week or a month. So there is that kind of route that they have experienced their work not lasting forever. So I think with that kind of mindset, there's always that just, you know, maybe not forever. Nice. But yeah, I think definitely taking measures and just trying. One thing you could do is you can clear coat it, right? Yeah. We can clear coat walls that even though you do aerosol and try to keep those up, and that'll help it keep its color and its integrity a little bit longer.
You know, I think having a short time frame on art allows it, for example, building owners to feel like it's less of a risk, and for cities to take, municipalities to take more risks, schools to take more risk. If you say, you know what, it's only paint, a couple years, you can paint over it. The idea of temporary is easier to take a risk. Also, as an artist, take more risks, you know, it doesn't have to be there forever. I think there's some benefits to thinking about a work of art as not forever, but it's an expression of now. And, how long do the powwow murals, do you expect each one of those to last?
Well, you know, the great thing about the murals is that they'll last for a year. Some have been around for 2 years now. So they'll last as long as they can. Really.
Will you, in the next powwow festival, paint over any of the ones that have been there?
We're trying to avoid painting over stuff. I feel like we have a landscape that should provide plenty of wall space,
mm-hmm.
or the city of San Jose. Mm-hmm. So we're a lot bigger than all of our neighbors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and me knowing the landscape, I definitely see the potential for us to continue to like add more walls versus painting over walls. But not to say that, you know, if a wall was to be ruined, damaged, and what have you, then yeah, we'll come back and put our efforts and make sure we have something. But something about temporary, I think it might get washed a little bit, I think for us, temporary came from necessity.
Right.
Opportunity. If we didn't have temporary and the flexibility to say, as a property owner, as whoever you're consulting to paint their property, having that flexibility as artists who are coming from a stigma, breaking a stigma, from an area that wasn't really paying attention to public art in terms of muralists, we needed to find those opportunities, whether they were temporary or not. We had to, in order to break those barriers. So it was a necessity to do temporary.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, learning from my space and learning from so many things, accountability, a lot of other things that we can do temporary. And I think there's also a focus and important factor of permanent until things are obliterated and the galaxies explode.
You know? Yeah, yeah. You know, this might surprise you, but in my interview with Michael Ogilvie last time, he was actually encouraging me. I was saying, you know, how to get more art in my local community. And he said, you know, paint a wall, show people what they could get, and then paint over it, you know? I thought, wow. You know, he's advocating what you just said, which is sort of ask permission second, try something, you know, knowing it's only paint.
Because I've experienced it myself. We're out there painting. And true story, and partly I felt really, really bad about, you think you do your due diligence and you knock on every door and you're like, okay, great. I've made sure that I've done the advocacy work that needs to be done here, and I've engaged the community the best of my abilities with time and considering everything else that I have to do to make something like POWWOW happen with limited resources and capacity. I missed one person one year, and this neighbor came out and she was really upset. She was really upset. We didn't make her night. She expressed that no one had engaged with her. She had been living there for 30 years. She, you know, was upset that she would have to look at this every day. And we weren't really connecting until the artist, a woman artist who was collaborating with another local artist here, she said, can we speak woman to woman? And she was able to pull her aside and say, listen, I'm sorry for us, you know, for you having to go through this. And yes, if nobody engaged with you, then, you know, I apologize for that. And really just ultimately said, look, I'm trying my best to paint something beautiful for you. And that's all I can say is that I will do this with, you know, the best intentions. And if you don't like it, you can throw a bucket of paint on it. She told her that, literally. And the neighbor was so, you know, just so polite that she's like, I would never do something like that. But so we moved on and we just called it a night. And it was uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable. And I was a bit upset and just disappointed in myself. Like, wow, how did I miss that? Well, towards the end of that week, when the artists are near completion, I had started to hear rumors that she was ecstatic and was complimenting and engaging with the artist. And I almost kind of didn't believe it until I showed up. And she came out. I think she was just watching. And she came out and she just gave me a hug and said, thank you. I'm so sorry. I didn't realize what you guys are doing. I feel like this piece was painted just for me. Like those stories and that impact,
yes,
is that's the truth.
Yeah.
And those are the things that's like right. We all are living here and we try our best, but it's like even when we're trying to do something good, we might disappoint somebody.
Yeah. But that's a risk of doing something in the public space. Some people may not like it, but my experience mirrors that so much of the time people end up getting on board, they get excited, they warm up. People at first don't like change, and then once they see what's coming, sometimes they become the biggest fans.
I feel like I never have to worry about that wall ever. Yeah. Because
she's gonna protect it. You got a bulldog watching it.
If you have anything bad to say about that wall or do anything to it, you have her to deal with.
Yeah. That says a lot about the tone and the consideration that you bring to the powwow project, which I bet makes a big difference and is why it has been considered such a success and is now embraced by the city of San Jose also, is because you bring that integrity to it of wanting to do good, wanting to bring beauty into the neighborhood, wanting to include people, knock on doors. That's great.
Powwow is a movement, and the artists that come together, when I reach out to them, they know what we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. I don't really hide it. I say we're working with Peanuts, and you can be a huge contributor right now. I wish I could pay you. Mm-hmm. And then many times they're like, hey, Carlos, you know what, man? Like, don't worry about that. Like, we want to come. We want to help. We want to do our part. So the artists that we work with are conscious. They have a conscience. And outside of our event, they're already doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, their art represents people who are considerate of our society and of our humanity.
It must feel so good to paint in a tribe that's aligned in that way. Together, you know, on a purpose like that.
That's the beauty of it. Yeah. I think for me, you know, our conversation about, you know, how we find each other and our paths, you know, it will sound like the ancient alien guy right now, but, you know, I truly believe that the universe puts us, you know, those are things that I've inspired through meditation that I truly believe that. We are connected and there's a design that ultimately wants to connect us.
I love this and I see this and this rings as true as you tell me this and I agree. And there's a skeptic also inside of me that has this parallel reality, which is twofold. One is that in order to make it sustainable for artists to do it for a long time, to get good at what they do and to continue to bring their message in as they get older and have kids and mortgages and stuff like that, it has to be, their efforts have to be remunerated and paid so that they can then make it the centerpiece of their life.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise they're working as waiters in paint stores and they're doing it on the weekends. So that's the downside. Is you have the mission, but figuring out if they could get paid, then they could do it sustainably over a long period of time.
I think about this all the time because personally, like I've had to reflect, okay, how can I sustain what's realistic? Doing several projects and trying to wear different hats and sometimes you're doing the work that you're just showing up that's nonprofit and you're just there because you want to help and you're not getting paid. That's, you know, a lot of the times. But I try to balance it where like now I am totally against like the idea of last minute thinking and consideration for artists. Like it can work for many people to be a life painter maybe every weekend at whatever event is going on. But, you know, in terms of longevity and the projects that will allow, for instance, what I try to do is be able to do a project that's going to allow me to be free and not have to worry about my bills every week, every month, and be able to have that room to say, I can do other things. My bills are being paid because I'm very minimal. I'm not, you know, just throwing money out there. I try to consume as least as possible. Half the time, a lot of the projects that I've done in public art have been through recycling.
Mm-hmm.
The gallery, Empire Center Studios, was done through recycling, a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it was safe and reusable. We repurpose. I love repurposing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's like part of the art form for me, which I remember somebody else was talking about that on your podcast. And I really love that because I can relate. But yeah, I think leadership for me personally, the leadership I feel like I've been developed. You know, I learned so much from some of my leadership and through grants and things like that, where we've been successful, but I've also realized like I'm hitting the ceiling. Mm. I'm growing and I can't continue to expand. I can't grow any further. There's a ceiling and there's a cap. So I do at this moment feel that I've been taught and built to be better, mm-hmm. yet I can't excel because the resources and the platform is not there. Policy needs to change.
Right.
Rules and regulations and the process needs to change.
But like Aaron just got the Knight Foundation grant, something like that, salary for you, part-time assistant, you're writing more grants, you could get something rolling that way. So mural art, street art, mural art is really stemming from the street art. Where we're at today, I think traditionally was very fueled by street art. And that skewed towards young and male, both because it didn't pay a lot. You know, you had to scale buildings and run away really quick over fences. And there's a certain street art culture, which I don't necessarily fit into, being middle-aged female. And mm-hmm. I'm often wondering, for example, the underpaid festivals. How do you have to be proactive about plurality of voices? Do you think about that? And how can we have the most inclusive sort of perspectives happening in our public street art spaces? And what do you see your responsibility to that as curator?
I think you're talking about the coexisting in terms of art.
I guess it seems like it would take some deliberate effort to have it not be 85 or 90% young males creating the artwork.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how do you get it to 50-50? How do you get older people, long-term artists?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the voice is different. Like, I'm actually right now going through the sort of hearts and rainbows phase of my artwork.
Yeah.
Young guys are not, that's not their perspective, but I like to delight kids and I like things that make people feel good. So, you know, it's just a different kind of perspective. And it's just an example of, there's just a lot of different ways to express yourself.
Yeah.
And it's good that it comes from different types of people, in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when I hear the term street art, it really throws me off, I'll be honest, because I think street art is somewhat political and take a Banksy or something like that, or even the guy that was doing it before him and stencil art or chess, border quiz. Like, you know, you have people who took their art to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people, and I know that a lot of graffiti writers don't like the label. And I think, on that note, artists in general, in some cases, I hate a label. I say I'm a painter because I don't have credentials. I don't have a master's. I'm not self-taught because I've learned from many friends and I've learned through my experiences. And those come from other people, right? I've learned that, you know. Self-taught is not self-taught. Self-taught is paying attention and observing and really
well
making
said.
Sure.
Well said.
So trying to get away from labels, period, I think is important because, like you said, if we start to take a label away, then it's just art. I appreciate art, all of it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. If we don't know one or the other, we won't know, right? It's a contrast. So, and you have to appreciate it. And not to be mean, I'm not saying I'm walking around saying art is bad. I'm just saying, like, sometimes the stuff is horribly great. Like, wow, this is so good. I remember seeing a mural in Long Beach that's so faded, so old, and so old school. And I was like, man, this thing is the coolest. It looks so bad right now, but it's so cool.
It's still neat.
It has its character, you know? So I think, you know, labels will allow us to just be people doing the work that we do. I really try to look at life in that sense now, because at the end of the day, I want to be the best that I can in terms of a person too, in everything that I do. Road rage and either somebody interrupting my conversation or literally coming up to me saying I'm gonna punch you in the face. I've walked away from things in the last few years that I could have never done many years ago.
Yeah, well, you're tough to barb. I've been trying with all these punchy questions.
I will say that actually some of the restaurants up here are killer. Like up here.
Like the peninsula, yeah.
Oh, yeah. 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 Redwood City.
Yeah, Redwood City.
You got a lot of Peruvian food over there, a lot of Latin American food over there, which we lack in San Jose. Yeah. But, of course, we're heavily, you know, Mexican, but Vietnamese.
Yeah.
The Indian community, you know, the island community, Ethiopian community now is heavy in San Jose. The Japanese, I would say that I would love to see a Chinatown in San Jose, though, which we don't have. Mm-hmm. So, but that being said, is I think there is, but we're slowly losing that.
The diversity aspect.
In the food.
In the food, yeah.
We're losing that because the mom and pops that had a restaurant, that found success in a restaurant, at least in terms of raising a family and being able to put your kids through college. You put your kids through college so that they don't have to run a restaurant and work as hard as you do. At least I'm assuming that. Mm-hmm. Unless they find passion and love in the culinary arts or cooking. They're not going to, you know, pass, you know, a tech job that's going to pay you handsomely or, you know, very. So we're very much, I think, in what I think, in my opinion, is that we're, because of that we're losing a lot of our tradition and our culture. So it is, to your question, is that's the important thing, I think, to try to hold on to and not lose sight of.
I was talking to my mom before this interview, and I'd forgotten. She graduated from San Jose State in 1961. So I asked her, well, what was San Jose like? She's like, oh, it's kind of a small town in a really big university. Like it was the university overshadowed, you know, little San Jose.
It's much bigger than the city.
I was like, huh? She's like, yeah, I worked in a shoe store. The downtown was about 4 blocks long or something. I mean, I think she has a vague memory because, you know, she was only in San Jose for 4 years. But it's true. It's growing so fast. It seems to me like we need to almost curate or be proactive about the kind of culture that persists. So does it have that like homegrown flavor still, or is it going to be shiny and new, you know? And how does that feel? And what does that look like?
It's going to be just another trend. Trends are dangerous, and I'm surprised that people, or maybe, you know, maybe there's a temporary factor there too in trends, probably, you know? Obviously, you can capitalize on something if it's trending. But I think if you're someone, me, I'm personally someone who loves to find the misery and everything, and it fuels the fire for me personally.
There's not many people who would admit to that, so that's pretty brilliant right there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think because I've like, again, I had to find things to understand who I am. I don't want friends or people to feel like my way of thinking is a burden on you. But as long as I just kind of would love to share that, I'm happy understanding this is who I am, you know, and who I am is like, I don't really agree with, you know, for example, a trend, because I'm in this for hopefully a long run. So, you know, maybe have fun with it or something and find a happy medium.
That's it for this episode. Thanks again for joining me, Morgan, your hostess of If These Walls Could Talk. If you ever need a mural, I hope you know who to call. Visit my portfolio at morganmurals.com. And thank you for believing in the power of public art, of the power of mural art, and for being fellow journeyers on this path with me. Take care. Bye-bye.